A gruesome story leads off our newscast.
Milwaukee police found body parts in a Northside apartment, and now they wonder if they've uncovered some kind of death factory.
At least 30 people have been found dead at a hotel.
Police found parts of bodies, leading them to believe the man they arrested is a mass murderer.
C-O-Z-O.
Oh my God!
And welcome everybody to another episode of Lobotomized. I'm Kevin.
Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
Yes. And I mean, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know that we usually stick to the subjects and everything like that. Don't give you too much of a peek behind the curtain, aside from like our top five episodes. But today, Amanda, if you could tell us your fatty fat story.
I'm a fat piece of shit.
That'd be awesome.
I'm just telling you.
Tell us all about you being a fatty fat. So.
Oh my God. Yeah. I worked. I didn't realize until I was driving here how fat I am. So I worked all day and I forgot my lunch. So I did not eat all day. I like, you know, snacked on some graham crackers at work, but whatever. So I was completely starving. Drove home from work. Picked up my son from the sitters and then just drove home. And I was like, Dustin, I'm starving. And so go in the fridge, you know, we had the box of Mrs. T's. It's like probably four servings in it. It's just like the Mrs. T's pierogies, like the mini ones. There's like 20
nice. Those
in
are
there.
Awesome.
They're
yeah.
so good.
Yeah, they're amazing.
So anyways, I was like, I'm so hungry. I'm probably going to eat all of these. I've done that before. Mm-hmm. So anyways, make the whole thing. Don't even offer them to my son. Okay. I'm just like, I am starving. I've not eaten all day. So I make the Mrs. T's pierogies, add some onions, whatever, all that stuff, made them good. So I ate all of them. Okay. I ate every single one. There was probably like, I didn't have to. Okay. I probably had like seven left where I'm like, I'm not that hungry anymore, but I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't want to go through the effort of putting these away. Therefore,
yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to eat them.
Might as well finish.
So I sat there and I just one by one and I'm just like, oh, wow. I feel like a walrus right now. Like I feel so fat. Okay. My dad was making fun of me. He's like, oh, my, you ate the whole thing. You didn't offer any to anybody. I was like, no, I was hungry, you know.
Get your own pierogies, bitch.
Right. I was hungry. So but it made sense because I did not eat all day. So as I'm driving here, I realized, oh my fucking God, when I left work to go pick up Mac from the sitter, I stopped at McDonald's and I ate a bunch of McDonald's. Forgot.
And completely forgot.
Completely forgot.
Was that the only restaurant that was around?
I literally went McDonald's. Like, I literally
gross.
Drove, ate a whole thing of McDonald's, picked him up from the sitters, fucking forgot. I just ate a bunch of McDonald's. And somehow, me forgetting that, like, my stomach was like, oh, you didn't eat it. You are starving.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally was re-starving at home. Like, my brain, it was so, I don't know how I blacked out eating McDonald's.
Magnesia.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, that's what you get for eating fucking McDonald's, okay?
You know what's funny? I really never eat McDonald's. No. I just was like,
nobody should.
But I can't believe I got McNesia.
I like that term, though. I do like that term.
But I blacked out that whole half an hour.
That is so weird.
Forgot.
While you were driving in the car with your son.
No, it was before.
Oh, it was before.
I stopped in the fucking
parking
lot.
Oh, because you didn't want to get Mac anything. Okay.
No, I didn't get Mac. No, I literally got a, you know, a chicken sandwich, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want to eat while driving. So I literally parked in the parking lot, ate, finished that, went to pick him up, fucking forgot. And then I literally came home starving.
Did you wipe your mouth with the bag?
It is way worse. I can't believe you
brought this up. How is it worse? How is that worse?
What did you do? Yeah, I thought that was about as low as you could.
What did you do?
It's worse. It's worse. I go. They didn't give me any napkins.
Of course they didn't, because it's McDonald's and everybody works like fucking an idiot.
So you did.
An extra clean diaper.
No! No! Are you serious? Oh my god! Oh my god!
You should have just done the bang. Like, I'm just saying.
Oh my god, I hope somebody saw you do that. I hope somebody saw you do that.
I mean, if you would have ate the McDonald's out of the diaper, then that would, like, that would completely sum up my opinion of McDonald's.
Right.
That's what you should have done.
Because I'm like, oh my god.
You should have ordered your food, grabbed your diaper, and walked inside the establishment.
This is why earlier when you were saying when you called your dad on the way here, and you're like, I am so disgusting, Dad. And he's like, I know, but. But why?
I know you're disgusting, but like, why?
What reason are we talking about?
And then I told him that story, and my dad was like, you should be ashamed of yourself. I got McNesia. That's a fucking great term.
Yep.
Oh, my stomach hurts.
We're pointing words here on this podcast.
That's fun.
So if you guys can top my fat story.
I can't. I cannot. I tap out.
I just ordered like a bunch of food today right after work because I was finishing off a fast, and that's it. So,
oh my god!
Yeah. On the way back from my trip to Michigan, I spent $52 on Taco Bell.
All right,
Liza got like two tacos.
She spent two of the $52.
Yeah, seriously,
they're like two cheesy bean rice burritos that are like some of the cheapest things on the menu.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure Taco Bell is more expensive in Michigan. That's what I'm saying.
That's his story, and he's sticking to it.
I mean, Taco Bell is pretty expensive here. I did some damage, and when he told me the total, I was like, God damn it. I was like, yeah, no, keep everything. But I'm just not happy about it.
Yeah, so, I know.
When the fuck did Taco Bell become fucking expensive?
Like, I don't know,
like,
dude,
a chicken burrito supreme is like $7. Like, dude, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it is not that good.
No. I don't know. Taco Bell's got a hold on a lot of people.
Oh, of course it does. I mean, it's a convenience thing.
One of those who will have that craving and I just have to go spend $60.
Yeah.
But it's so dumb because I'll eat two of the things. I'll be like, I'm fine.
And then I'm like,
oh, I have but four more pounds of food.
Yeah, you see the menu and you're like, well, that looks sweet. It's like, yeah, I want a Mexican pizza. Are you serious?
Yeah, they're always coming out with like the new shit that's only out for like 2 weeks. And it's like, you know, I want to try that.
Yeah.
And I have to do it now.
All right. Well, unfortunately, this is not the fat fuck episode that we're doing tonight. Tonight
that would be a fun episode.
We only do a fun episode.
An episode just like that.
We should do a fat fuck episode.
Like Amanda just told. Just,
yeah.
We'll just go around the table.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Oh, boy.
But tonight we're actually talking about Eddie Mannix, the notorious old Hollywood fixer. So neither one of you guys had heard about this guy, have you?
I never heard of this guy.
I randomly came across it. I think it was like one of the randoms that I put on the list of possible episodes.
Oh, nice.
And it was just like, all right, yeah, let's do this. And just kind of, I actually had to look again to see who that, I was like, is he a serial killer?
Yeah.
Well, kind of, but I mean, you know, I had to actually look again and be like, who the fuck is this guy? But it's actually a pretty crazy story with this dude. So let's get into it. So Eddie Mannix, he was born Joseph Edgar Allen John. Jesus Christ, how many fucking names you need, dude?
Yeah,
he's like John Jacob names. Jingleheimer Schmidt. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? But he was
born, named it for Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, maybe, but like they didn't know his name.
He's got three middle names.
They got like two out of three ain't bad.
They couldn't decide.
Like, what the hell's, like, his parents were just stupid. Like, what the hell's his name? Edgar Allan John? Like, yeah, that's right. Put it on the birth certificate.
It was 1891. They didn't fucking know. But yeah, so he was born February 25th, 1891, and he lived until August 30th, 1963. So he was a powerful American film studio executive and producer, best known as a longtime general manager at MGM and as one of Hollywood's most notorious fixers.
So when you initially said fixer, this reminded me of the show Scandal. I know you guys have never seen it.
No.
It's now it's just on reruns. And it's fucking great. It stars Kerry Washington. What the hell's his name?
Willem Dafoe.
No, from Tom Hanks. Ghost. From the Belko experiment.
God damn it. I can see him.
I know. It pisses me off that I can't think of his name.
God, I'm blanking. He's from Friday the 13th, Part 6.
Yes, I know.
Which guy in Belko experiment?
The manager.
The manager. Manager.
Who's the bad guy in Ghost?
Oh, the gold. Tony Gold.
Yes, Tony Gold. There it is. I was blanking.
So,
and that we're talking about MGM too.
Yeah.
So, So when you heard Fixer, I immediately thought it was the show Scandal because the whole point, and it's such a fucking good show, but. In the show, she's a lawyer. I know he's not a lawyer, but she's like a fixer for the political side of things and the government. And so when I heard, because you know that there's fixers in real life. You
of course
know,
there still is.
Scandalous fictitious.
They've just gotten better.
Right. Scandalous fictitious, but it's like, dude, this stuff really happens. So when I heard that we were doing this guy and he's like a real life fixer, it's like, oh. Man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shit.
All right. So he was born in Fort Lee, New Jersey. He actually left school early and worked at Palisades Amusement Park as a ticket taker, bookkeeper, and bouncer. I didn't know amusement parks had bouncers, but...
Where's your ticket?
I mean, that is the closest thing to like running away and joining the circus, isn't it? Like that was a big thing in like 1940s, like kids. They all
give me that cotton candy.
Yeah, they all dreamed of like running away and joining the circus or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, a school in what, like 1900? How good could it have been?
You're not missing much.
Yep, exactly. You learn more in the carny game and so he had ties to rougher elements and built a reputation for handling problems forcefully. All right. He had a key connection with this guy, Nicholas Shenick, who was actually his boss at the park, and he ended up rising up in the film industry. So Mannix followed him into Hollywood, initially helping his interests before aligning with MGM leadership. So sounds like he was kind of doing it for this guy for a little bit, but he was more small time. And then, MGM called him up to the fucking big leagues, I guess.
No, I think what had happened was that Nick Shenick, he was like, hey, I need you to, because he initially wanted a job with MGM and it was given to somebody else.
Okay.
She's like, hey, man, I need you to like get in here. And he wanted to help. That guy wanted Mannix to help him get into MGM.
Okay.
And instead, Mannix got in there and was like, fuck you, I'm with them now. Left this guy.
Yeah, they just plucked him out of there, you know? But, so, like we just said, you know, he joined MGM around 1924, 1925, and became a top executive, serving as general manager for decades until the early 1960s. He worked closely with studio head Louis B. Mayer and the publicity chief Howard Strickling. Together, they ran a highly effective machine to protect the studio's biggest stars and its bottom line by, one, you know, covering up scandals, affairs, pregnancies, abortions, that kind of thing, managing press and paying off witnesses, arranging sham marriages, basically for actors that were gay back then and were closeted, and then handling everything from minor PR issues to major potential career destroyers for stars like Clark Gable, Judy Garland, Elizabeth Taylor, and others. He was known for his tough street smart style and willingness to bend, or in most cases, break the fucking rules to keep MGM's image pristine during the golden age of Hollywood. So,
So this happens now all the time.
Yeah, this totally happens now.
This happens now. This is like we're talking about 100%. This guy, but there's probably like, you know,
that's what I'm curious.
So many people. Like, long,
who's doing it today? Like, who's doing it today?
You know, like Weinstein. You know, like
how
long? Who was his guy for him to get away with that for so long?
Yeah, I mean, well,
finally the you know the bubble burst.
He should probably fire him. So
yeah, the bubble burst on that, but you know that's a good thing. But I'm sure
it is a good thing.
It still happens. It still happens.
But yeah, no, 100% still happens. All right, so a little into his personal life. So he was first married to Bernice. Her nickname was Bunny. That's cute.
I like that.
Yeah, that's cute. But they got married in 1916 until her death in 1937. A few years later, in 1951, he married Toni Lanier, his longtime mistress. Their relationship was complicated. Toni actually had a long affair with Superman actor George Reeves. Not Christopher Reeves. Well, not Christopher Reeve, but George Reeves. George Reeves was the original Superman.
Is that his dad?
No, they're not related.
That's weird.
Because, I know. It is just one of those weird things. Because his name is Reeves. And it's Christopher Reeve.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
I thought it was Christopher Reeves.
Yeah.
But. That's like a Mandela effect for me.
Yeah.
I guess.
But yeah, like they just have the very similar name, but they're not related or anything like that. They both are, you know, made Superman big. Like George started off, Christopher, you know, brought it up to the, well, not the peak, but brought it up even more with all his movies and everything. So Mannix himself had a reputation for infidelity, domestic issues, and a hard living lifestyle. All right.
Good guy.
Yeah, good guy.
Good guy.
So now we'll get into all these accounts here. I'm going to preface this by saying all these are alleged. Mannix was never arrested, never charged with any of these things.
He did it.
So just to avoid, you know, repeating it like it's the, you know, Big Herb fucking episode.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say right now that all these accounts are alleged, even though they probably fucking happened.
It.
Yeah, alleged. Probably. They're alleged. And I'm doing finger quotes right now.
But, all this. I wanted to just say about this.
This is a good time,
because this guy's kind of like the reason why a person like Eddie Mannix was even, you know, there to cover up shit. Because this Fatty Arbuckle guy was like a huge silent film star, and he
was fat like Amanda.
I'm a fan.
He would have been so proud of you.
Yeah, I know. He would have loved you.
He was having some wild freaking liquor and, you know, orgy party at some fucking hotel and shit.
Some basically, fucking Eyes Wide Shut bullshit.
Yeah, basically, he yelled, some things never change.
Yeah, I know, right?
But, basically a woman died and... I think it was possibly rape and stuff. And that was a huge scandal that went on for like a year, you know, with several trials and, you know.
So he was like actually arrested and shit and went to trial. Oh, fuck. All right.
Yeah.
That's probably at that point they were like, we can never let this happen again.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. So that is the short story about basically why studios would have a guy like this. Working with him in the first place.
Did they convict him? Do you know?
I didn't get that far.
Okay.
But I don't think they did because he did go on to make more movies, but his career was basically over.
Yeah, he made
He was like one of the biggest stars, you know, that the old, you know, movie studios had.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's cool. All right, so let's get into some of these. I've been talking for a minute. Anybody want to take this first one?
Sure.
Right, I'll go.
This would be the first one here. Patricia Douglas rape case.
Speaking of some things never change.
Some things never change.
Yeah. This one's rough.
Okay. Yeah. This 1937. One of the most notorious well-documented cases involved a 20-year-old dancer and film extra, Patricia Douglas. So in May of 1937, MGM hosted a lavish sales convention for all of its male salesmen at Hal Roach's ranch, billed as a Wild West show stag party. Hal Roach? That sounds like Little Rascals?
Possibly.
It's
yeah. I was gonna say, man, yeah, check that out for us.
Yeah. So, Patricia and other young women were hired under the pretense of just doing background work and hosting. They're given cowgirl outfits, and nice. They were all bussed out to the event. So the party featured a lot of heavy drinking, hundreds of cases of liquor.
Damn. Yeah, not bottles, cases.
I mean, this people back then were putting down booze.
Oh, 100%.
And now these people in Hollywood were really putting down booze.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously this is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. He was part of the, I believe, the Little Rascals.
Okay.
This is a simple Wikipedia thing.
No, that's fine.
It just says that he was an American film and television producer, director, screenwriter. He was an active in the industry and known for producing a number of early media franchises, including Laurel and Hardy and the Our Gang Kids.
Became Little Rascals.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sorry.
Used to watch a ton of Little Rascals when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
That's why that popped out to me. But anyway, so we got a huge liquor Wild West party. And,
I mean, right now it sounds like a good time.
Yeehaw!
It sounds cool.
It sounds pretty sweet.
I mean, this is just a recipe to get out of hand here, which is what happened. Because witnesses later described men molesting these hired women.
Oof.
A couple of guys, they allegedly forced liquor down Douglas's throat, and she briefly escaped, but was dragged to a parked car outside where she was raped by Ross, and slapping her to keep her conscious, because they must have really
dosed her.
It's awful.
Yeah, dude, that's fucked up. Fucked up.
So, but she eventually stumbled out of the car screaming, and she was taken to the hospital, which was tied to MGM. They had, their people in this hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she was examined and allegedly told to douche before being sent home in an MGM car. So she reported the assault to the authorities and the press. MGM via Mannix and Strickland, they launched a counter campaign. So they had private detectives dig up some dirt on her, which they couldn't really find that much. And the other party women were pressured to portray her as a drunk or that she was promiscuous. So they had witnesses recant or change their stories. And the DA convened a grand jury, but Ross was not indicted.
Indicted.
Yeah.
So Douglas filed several civil lawsuits naming Mannix and Ross and others about this conspiracy, because she's basically being gaslit here.
Pretty much. You know?
And with a bunch of legal stalling and a no-show by her lawyer in the federal court. So they must have paid him off.
Yeah. Most likely. Or threatened him.
Yeah. So other maneuvers they did that led to the trial being dismissed. So her story vanished from the official records for decades until it was rediscovered by the historian David Sten. And Mannix reportedly later quipped about having had her killed.
Mm-mm.
So metaphorically is what he meant. They just basically shut her up,
Shut her up and just destroyed all traces of the story, pretty much.
Yeah. Then she had to live with that, with no justice or anything, until she passed away in 2003.
What a shame.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. Yeah, so you did mention a surprise about the next guy here. So, Mandy, you want to take this one?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about the Clark Gable incidences.
Yeah, like plural. Right before as you walked in, like, it's like, I can't believe Clark Gable is a piece of shit.
I know.
Like, well, I mean, like, I kind of can, but.
I don't know if I've ever seen a movie with him in it, to be honest.
Dude, Gone with the Wind?
I've never watched it.
No? Okay.
So, Mannix was particularly protective of Clark Gable, whom he considered a close friend. So, in 1933, there was a hit and run. So, Gable allegedly struck and killed Brazilian actress Tosha Rulian while driving drunk.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Mannix reportedly arranged for the MGM screenwriter John Huston to take the blame as the fall guy.
Paid him off.
Huston faced investigation, but was cleared by a grand jury because he was sober and the victim had jaywalked. Fucking shit.
She was in the street.
The story was suppressed, preserving Gable's image.
Why would John Huston, of all people, agree to do that?
Like, probably because they knew that he wasn't going to get convicted.
Yeah, I guess. Better shot, you know, being a famous director or whatever than...
Oh, yeah.
Or he was threatened. If you don't do this, we're gonna kill you.
Or, yeah, well, it's that whole, like, if you don't do this, you'll never work in this town again. You know, fucking bullshit that old Hollywood threat. Like, you'll never work in this town again, you piece of shit. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Go back to Kansas. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So the next one was the Loretta Young pregnancy. This was in 1935. During filming of Call of the Wild, Gable, who was married, assaulted or had a coercive encounter with a 22-year-old co-star, Loretta Young.
That's just how it was back in the, you know, like, it was like, come here, babe. Like, you know, they would just do that with, you
know. Oh, fuck off. I'm just fucking around.
I know. I am just fucking around.
So, yeah.
I was like, come here, sugar tits. Like, man.
Like this one.
Clark, who was married, allegedly assaulted this 22-year-old co-star, resulting in a pregnancy. So Mannix and the team orchestrated a cover-up surrounding this. So the girl was sent away to have the baby secretly. And the child was presented as adopted.
Mm, yep.
So this shielded both from scandal over unwed motherhood and Gable's infidelity. The truth emerged publicly decades later. I will say the only thing I'm proud of here is that they didn't kill the child.
Yeah.
You know, and actually that surprised.
That's actually really surprising.
With how much of a piece of shit he is and crazy Hollywood is.
That was probably plan A. And she was probably like, no, I'm not going to fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to just, you know, accommodate for that because they couldn't kill her.
Europe or something for like 19 months.
Yeah, something like that. They sent her away for
all like blew over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she had to go through the trouble of adopting her own child.
Yeah.
Or just the pretending.
Well, they made it like a public thing from what I was reading. Like, they were like, oh, she's planning on adopting this boy and girl, but then like, that was just a fake out. The girl was her child, but like the boy, they just made some bullshit up. Like, oh, the boy's actual mother wants to take him back now. So then it was like, well, she ended up only being able to get the one kid.
Can you do that?
But it's her own kid. So
can you like go back like with your receipt and be like, give me that kid back? Like, is that how it works?
I don't even think that was real, though. Okay, but that's what they told.
But I mean,
you know, in the papers and shit.
That's what they're telling the people. So it's like, is that how it works? You just like, just hang on to the receipt just in case you want the kid back.
Like a dry cleaning ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
I know somebody who recently just adopted a newborn, and the mother. So they followed this lady through pregnancy. She agreed to, you know, you know, she was planning on giving up the child for adoption. So there, but technically, the mother, even into the child, the mother could have still wanted the child up to 72 hours after the birth.
Okay.
So even though this whole time, they're expecting to adopt the child, after the baby was born, the mother still had 72 hours afterwards to change her mind.
Wow.
Well, was there any takey backsies or anything like that? Like, what happened?
No,
okay, so she's stuck
with
guns.
But I'm just saying that, like, they're, at least for newborns, I don't know how, like, international adoptions go or anything like that.
Wouldn't that suck if you got, like, you buy the crib and, like, all the supplies and, like, you're all prepared for it and then, like, you know what? I actually want that now.
I'd be like, okay, well, then you're paying me for all this bullshit I just bought because now you need it. So.
Do you need a crib?
Because
I don't need it anymore. Yeah. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, because you're a fucking Indian giver.
Give me that kid. So. Give me that kid back.
All right, so let's get into the next one here. So the next one we're going to be talking about is the death of Paul Byrne in 1932. So Paul Byrne, an MGM executive and husband of star Jean Harlow, they were only married for 2 months, but, you know, it's Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So he was found dead in their home from a gunshot wound. The official ruling was suicide with a note left behind. However, there are accounts that suggest Mannix, Strickling, Louis B. Mayer, and others arrived at the scene before police and tampered with the evidence, staging it as a suicide to protect Harlow and the studio. Rumors persist that Byrne was murdered, possibly by his common-law wife, Dorothy Millette, who was in the area and later died by suicide after an argument. Neighbors reportedly heard fighting and breaking glass. A cover-up preserved Harlow's career as MGM's platinum blonde sex symbol, and Mannix's team influenced the quick resolution.
So I read that he was found naked.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, sure. Yeah.
And they were questioning, because, you know, he was having an affair, or no, he was, quote, married to Jean Harlow, but I think he was married still.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it was. Whatever it was, there was infidelity, and
you could have a couple back then, you know, without being Mormon. So that didn't matter.
It was something like that. Whatever I was reading, it was it was weird.
All right, so who wants to ruin the Wizard of Oz? Kyle, Kyle, you want to ruin the Wizard of Oz?
Fuck that movie.
I fucking love that movie, dude.
I fucking hate that movie. That's
a classic, dude.
It's just. That's a different podcast.
No, you got to like turn the sound off and put on Dark Side of the Moon. All right,
that's the only way to watch it
like that.
Yeah,
that's amazing. All right, go ahead, Dan.
I will say, it is for how old it is. The production is fantastic.
It is fantastic. Yes,
I just don't like the story.
Yeah, no, I
don't care for it.
That's cool.
But
Kyle coming in with the hot takes. Fuck the Wizard of Oz.
No, I tried to watch it the one time recently because Liza really liked it. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
You're just sitting there like, fuck favor. This movie.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, I'm just on it.
What, he's a fucking scarecrow? What the fuck is this stupid shit?
Yeah. And why everyone died.
Why is
everyone
he
fucking died because of that movie?
Shit, but yeah, all right, yeah, go ahead and steamroll it.
Okay, so here we go. So this is going to be about Judy Garland's drug addiction. She, the MGM's factory-like production system exasperated the young Judy's addiction issues. So the studio doctors prescribed amphetamines to keep her energetic for filming.
Nice.
Like The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And barbiturates to help her to go to sleep.
So, it's a hell of a cocktail, dude.
Yeah.
It's like a speed. It's like an old school speedball.
Right. So, this is going to foster a lifelong addiction and depression and many suicide attempts. But Mannix and Strickland managed the fallout, arranging rest cures and hospital stays, discreet rehabs, relationships for her stability, and suppressing publicity. So they kept her working as a top earner, but fired her later when the issue became unmanageable. This reflected a broader studio exploitation of talent.
They just used her up and then fucking tossed her aside when they couldn't fucking...
Yeah.
When they broke her too much.
Yeah, you're of no use to us anymore. Yep. So, bye.
Oh, man, that sucks.
But yeah, I mean, they didn't care about drugs at all back
then. No, they didn't.
A raging alcoholic on top of everything, too, so...
They had her like smoking cigarettes to like stay thin and shit like that. Like, it's like, here's some more cigarettes.
Yeah. Hey, you seem a little stressed. Here, let me give you a shot of morphine.
Yeah, there we go. Calm your right down. Jesus Christ. Mandy, you want to take the next one?
Yes.
Cool.
We'll talk about Ted Healy's death. This was in 1937. Creator of the Three Stooges, Ted Healy died days after a fight at the Trocadero nightclub. The official cause was complications from alcoholism. Alternative accounts claim that he was beaten by Wallace Beery, who was an MGM star, Albert Broccoli, and Pat DeSico. In the parking lot after an altercation.
His name is Broccoli.
That's awesome.
His name is Albert Broccoli. And they called him Cubby, too. I think that's weird. That's kind of cute. Sorry.
That's okay. So Mannix and Strickland allegedly covered it up to protect Beery, fabricating a story of college boys, sending Beery abroad temporarily, and influencing the coroner and police. Of course, because he's got his fucking little, you know, hands in every aspect. When you're a fixer, you have to have your hands in every fucking aspect.
You better be greasing a lot of palms, man. Yeah. Yeah. Like, right. You better be greasing all of them.
There's rowdy college boys. And it's like,
there's some fucking college boys going around beating the shit out of people for no reason.
And you just take the MGM star and he goes, fucking go across the ocean. And you fucking wait there until your name is cleared.
Yeah.
I know how big that guy is, but, like, that'd be weird. Like, a lot of, like, Hollywood people, you know, like, imagine getting your ass kicked by, like, Tom Hanks.
I know.
Like, and then, you know, the studio just pays you off a bunch of money and shit, or, like, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, thinking of, like, people who are around now.
Yeah.
Like that type of shit.
Jason Bateman just walks in my house and kicks my ass. Like,
I fucking love Jason Bateman.
I wouldn't like him then.
Love him.
I'd be a little upset with him if he did that.
Be like, what the fuck, Pepper Brooks? Like, what the fuck's your problem? Oh, shit. All right, I'll take the next one. So the next one we're going to be talking about is George Reeves' death and the Tony Mannix affair. This occurred in 1959. So, Mannix's personal life intersected with his fixer role. After his first wife's suspicious 1937 car accident death.
He did it.
He probably did. But
allegedly.
Allegedly. Yes, there you go. That's necessary. He married longtime mistress Toni Lanier in 1951. So, she began an open affair with Adventures of Superman star George Reeves. With Eddie's apparent knowledge, both of them were Catholic and avoided divorce.
I know that that guy was gay. Why else would you have an open affair? Like,
are you talking Mannix?
Yeah, well, hell
you
yeah.
You think Mannix is gay?
Yeah, absolutely. With George.
With,
or maybe not George, but
so,
anybody.
So him and his wife were fucking the same guy?
Yeah.
All right.
Superman.
I mean, who doesn't want to fuck Superman? I mean, like, let's be honest here.
I mean, I don't have evidence of this, but, like, why? I just find that really funny. Like, this guy's such, like, a big wig, and then he's like, okay, I'm going to allow my wife to have an open relationship with another man.
Yeah.
You're gay, and you're hiding yourself. You're a fixer. You're hiding yourself.
That's some cuck bullshit right there. Like, I'm definitely losing a lot of respect for this guy after this one, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's a hypocrisy of it, too, because, you know, he's Catholic. He doesn't want to get divorced.
But he'll kill people.
No. But adultery is fine.
I can't divorce my wife, so I guess I just have to kill her.
I mean,
how does that make sense?
But he's Catholic, so you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's like, which one of those is worse? Which one of those rules is worse? I don't know. He's just taking the lesser of the, well, killing people's fine. Like, people die all the time. Yeah. You know?
I mean, that's like literally in the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
There's one of the commandments isn't, don't get divorced.
Yeah. Don't get divorced is not in the Ten Commandments. So I'd probably start with that.
I'd start with that.
But yeah, so Reeves actually was the one who ended it in either 1958 or 59 when he got engaged. He died June 16th, 1959 from a gunshot to the head, which is ruled a suicide. But there was some goofy shit, like there was no fingerprints on the gun.
Oh, huh.
And there was other odd details.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he shot himself in the back.
Yeah.
Times.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he double tapped himself.
But yeah, that's, I don't know. What the hell? The fact that he gets killed after he cuts it off? After he stopped fucking his wife?
Yeah, dude, that does not make sense to me whatsoever.
Well, that's why I thought maybe he was gay and they both.
He just killed him in a jealous rage.
Either that or Tony. That wasn't Tony's lover at all. Like, maybe he just called it Tony's lover. You know what I mean? And he was like, you must not talk about this.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
I mean, he's a fixer. He hides shit. Like, who would get so mad at, you stop fucking
what
my
do you mean
wife?
You're not fucking my wife.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, dude.
Like, that's the most extreme
you
cuck ever.
You fucking my wife?
You think you would have killed him the moment you knew he was fucking your wife?
Yeah, it's like opposite.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
That's why it doesn't make sense. That's why I'm like, well, he's obviously hiding something himself. At least that's what I'm thinking.
If you don't start fucking my wife again, I'm going to kill you, motherfucker.
That reminds me of that bearded guy, Brett Gelman from The Other Guys. You guys seen that movie where...
I think I saw it once.
Will Ferrell's like such a pimp that he goes like to one of his exes and like she's already married to this guy and he's like obsessed with trying to get him to have sex with his wife. It's so weird though.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, I think I saw it once.
It's funny.
Yeah, nice.
It's worth it.
But yeah, so rumors suggested Mannix's organized crime ties led to the hit. Possibly at Tony's urging after the rejection. That is such a weird fucking conversation to envision.
That's why, like, I don't think it's real.
Imagine your wife
that.
Coming to you and being like, this guy isn't fucking me anymore. Like, we need to kill him.
I know.
I'm like, I'm gonna kill you, bitch. Like, yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
That's why I think it's BS. Because it doesn't
There's
make
more
any
to the
sense.
Story for sure.
Way
yeah,
more
I don't know,
to
what,
the,
I don't know
yeah.
what the hell
way
it is,
more but. To the story. But we'll never know because Mannix was a good fixer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet he hid that shit from anybody. Everybody. I bet no one except for his wife.
Yeah, she's probably the only one that knows.
Yeah.
So I guess Reeves had also had prior quote-unquote accidents as well. So they might have been after him for a minute until finally getting him. And the case remains controversial and actually inspired the film Hollywoodland. I don't know if anybody's seen that. Mm-hmm. I have not.
No, I heard about that. I think Bob Hoskins...
Okay.
I think Bob Hoskins actually plays Eddie Mannix.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice. Right. Yeah, I could see that.
He does look like him.
I could see that. That'd be cool. All right, so, Kyle, I believe you're up, sir.
Sure. This next one is the Busby Berkeley hit and run. This happened in the 30s. So, Busby Berkeley.
John just called him BB.
Okay, BB. Busby Berkeley.
Yeah.
It's like BB from here on out.
From here going forward.
That's a weird-ass name.
It is.
MGM's
renowned twister.
Choreographer is famous for elaborate musical numbers in films like 42nd Street, Gold Diggers. He was involved in a serious drunk driving incident, and he allegedly killed three people in a car accident.
Oh, shit.
Went all Ferris Bueller on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Mannix and Strickland's team, they intervened swiftly.
Of course they did.
witnesses were intimidated or paid off, and the story was suppressed in the press, legal consequences for Beebe evaporated. So, and he continued his career without any major interruption.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And this just shows how Mannix could protect all, like, the key creative talent people. Because these people are, you know, generate the most of the revenue, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the ones making, they're making the studio's money.
You know, some of that old Hollywood musical stuff is like, yeah, that takes a lot of, like, planning and, you know, choreographing. Yeah. So somebody like that, they don't want, they don't want him getting sent to prison. But, yeah. So, a lot of car accidents.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like that happened quite a bit.
Driving town.
Yeah, nice. All right, so Amanda.
So we'll talk about the Joan Crawford blackmail / stag film. So before her rise to stardom, Joan Crawford, who was then known as Lucille Lesueur, was allegedly involved in a silent era lesbian themed stag film.
Nice.
Or compromising material that surfaced as blackmail material once she became a major star. Mannix reportedly tracked down and destroyed all the copies, paying a substantial sum. One account even mentions up to $100,000 for the master.
That's a ridiculous amount of money.
To eliminate
back
the threat.
Especially back then.
This prevented a scandal that could have derailed her image as a glamorous leading lady. Mannix's network of contacts and willingness to deploy muscle or cash made such erasures possible. That is amazing. That how do you get all the copies? I bet there's one fucking copy in someone's basement.
I was going to say, yeah. I guarantee there's a couple sitting around.
There's a couple. There's no way he got all of them.
It's like that that episode of The Simpsons where fucking Bart and Milhouse like find all those like ridiculous tapes of like just different fucked up shit. It's like the one of them is like Mr. Rogers drunk and they're like just watching all this like goofy shit. Like, it's in a collection. Somebody who has a collection like that probably has one of these copies.
Absolutely.
So if you're out there and you have this silent era lesbian film,
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Or don't tell anybody. And then secretly
just DM. Like, I was going to say, I need DM and I would like to see it for research. Obviously.
For research. So,
yeah, you know. Yeah, it's important.
It's history.
Film history. Yeah, it's historical.
I'm a film historian.
Yeah. I was like, though, Joan Crawford, I didn't know that her real name was Lucille Lesueur. Like,
it sounds like Peter LeFleur.
I mean, kind of, but like,
Dodgeball.
I think that's like a way sexier name than Joan Crawford.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly.
Like, if you're trying to go for like exotic, the Vixen, you know? Like exotic shit, like, why didn't she just go by that? Like, that's so much better.
Yeah, Joan Crawford.
Or maybe that was like just her porn
living
name.
Living on a farm or something.
That could have just been her porn name in the movie.
That would make sense.
So.
Lucille Lesueur.
Yeah.
Well, is that the same time that Lucille Ball was around? Did they want to change her name because of that? What year was this?
Maybe. This one was probably, I actually don't have a year on this, but it's probably like 20s, 30s, something like that. So
yeah, it was a silent film. It was before she was famous.
Yeah.
So. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So
yeah.
She was around in like the 30s and 40s. So it was probably around that time. So same thing with like Lucille Ball. I think Lucille Ball was like hanging around in the 30s and stuff.
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, I think, like, I Love Lucy was on in, like, the 50s.
Right? Yeah, I think that probably came on in the 50s, but she was probably doing stuff before,
you know.
But, yeah. All right, so next one we're going to be talking about is the Thelma Todd death that occurred in 1935. So, actress Thelma Todd, known for her comedies and her ice cream blonde persona, was found dead in her garage from carbon monoxide poisoning. Officially
ice cream blonde.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's like a more of a whitish blonde or something like that, I would think. Like maybe think like, you know, just like a extremely light light blonde, maybe like
kind of sense here.
Yeah.
White.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I've never heard that.
Mm-hmm. But the death was officially ruled accidental or suicide. However, persistent rumors linked it to mob connections. Apparently, she was involved with figures like Lucky Luciano and had disputes with gangsters, which is like, damn, girl, like, calm down. Like, calm down a little bit. Mannix allegedly helped clean up the scene and the narrative, influencing the investigation to protect MGM's interests and any associated parties. Details remain murky, but his involvement in staging or redirecting such deaths was part of his fixer repertoire. Nice.
S. Diddy over here is getting there before the cops.
I know, dude. They're calling him first. All right, Cal, you next.
All right, yeah. Girl. We're going to be talking about Spencer Tracy and the Loretta Young affairs and pregnancies. So Mannix handled multiple issues for Spencer Tracy, who was a hardcore alcoholic.
Oh, yeah.
Including his long affair with Loretta Young. This was separate from the Clark Gable incident.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to...
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. All right.
She's making her rounds through Hollywood.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah, she's pretty busy.
Old drunken Hollywood. So... Yeah, Tracy's notorious alcoholism, violence, and extramarital relationship posed ongoing risk. And the team arranged cover stories, the quote-unquote rest tears, and managed the publicity just like they always did. In broader pregnancy cases, Mannix facilitated abortions for unwed starlets and arranged adoptions for, you know, when they had the child, when the stars refused, as with Young and Clark Gable,
mm-hmm.
She refused. So
yeah,
his desk said the only star at MGM is Leo the Lion.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I was gonna say I kind of like that. I do kind of like that.
Yeah, kind of just saying like no one's special, but it also, you know, reflects his priority is that it's the studio above all else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the actors are just, you know, they just bring in money.
Yep, exactly. They're just money machines until they're not.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So fucking Mickey Rooney.
All right,
tell us about Mickey Rooney here.
We'll talk about Mickey Rooney's serial infidelities and troubles. So, Mickey Rooney, who was a massive box office draw as a teen star, had numerous marriages, affairs, and financial scandals. Mannix repeatedly intervened to suppress stories of his cheating, domestic issues, and impulsive behavior that could alienate fans. This included payoffs, press manipulation, stabilizing arrangements to keep Rooney productive. Similar to Judy Garland, it showed Mannix's role in sustaining the studio's, quote, family-friendly youth stars amid personal chaos.
I can't picture Mickey Rooney as, like, a pimp. You know what I mean?
Not at all, no.
It's just like, I just know him as, like, an old man, and then those clips from fucking Breakfast at Tiffany's where he's just, like, being hilarious, you know? I don't know, you know about that? With him in there, yeah. So, like, obviously, Mickey Rooney, white guy. Mm-hmm. In the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's, he plays, like, an Asian dude.
The most racist.
It's, like, the most
racist caricature Chinese man.
It's ridiculous.
No way. Like, I've never seen that show,
He's, like, this close to just wearing a Raiden hat. Like, it's fucking insane. But, like, he puts on these glasses, and he's got, like, the big, like, buck teeth and shit. And he's just like, oh, like, doing, like, that shit.
I've seen clips of just his part.
It's but I've never insane. Watched that whole movie.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like, dude.
So fucking insane.
You're a white guy.
I know. But, yeah, he's an actor. He's playing a fucking Asian guy. Like, he's, you know, doing the stereotype, but yeah, starts playing a fucking Asian guy. Like, I don't know.
There is Asian actors, though, too.
Yeah, there is. There is. I know, but like, yeah, like, but like, all the shit, like, I just know him as like an old man, you know?
Mostly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had like probably one of the longest Hollywood careers, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he's been like around forever.
Little kid.
Yeah,
He like started then and literally went through his whole fucking life just in there.
What is it? Silent Night, Deadly Night 5?
Yeah.
that is like the one thing that I'm like fucking like, fuck you, Mickey Rooney. Because he was one of the people who, when the first one came out, was all like, oh my God, this is fucking reprehensible garbage and blasphemous and blah, blah, blah. And then he starred in the fifth one. It's like, dude, shut the fuck up. All right. Just shut the fuck up.
Money talk, bullshit walks. Yeah,
exactly. So next we're going to talk about Greta Garbo a little bit. So Mannix helped conceal Greta Garbo's rumored lesbian relationships and reclusive tendencies. The studio crafted her as a mysterious, you know, gave her an unattainable image while suppressing details of her private affairs that might clash with audience expectations. This involved monitoring communications, paying off potential sources, and directing publicity narratives. Standard operating procedure for Mannix's team.
So they're just like controlling this chick's whole life just because she's like into other chicks.
Monitoring communications. Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Do you have somebody following her?
That makes me sound like, you know, makes it sound like she's kind of a prisoner.
Right. Well, because monitoring communications, they don't have, like, what year was this? Okay, obviously they don't have cell phones.
No.
You know, does everybody, what year is this? Does
well, they're,
are they telephones would, pretty
They would
common?
Steal people's telegrams. Like, basically. I think that is a note, like, later on. They would, like, intercept telegrams to read them first. Like, imagine, like, a lesbian, like, communication, like, meet me later. Stop. You look so hot the other day. Stop. Wear that pink dress. Stop. I don't know why they always said stop when they were doing it, but, like, that's how telegrams were read back in the day.
Yeah. So, Kyle, you want to talk about some personal scandals here?
Yeah. He has his own set of troubles, too. So, his, basically, yeah, his life reflected the, all the bullshit that he put up with, you know, in his professional life. So, he reportedly beat his girlfriend, who was later an actress, Mary Nolan, so severely that she was hospitalized for 6 months.
Jesus Christ,
dude. With 15 fractures.
Dude, that's fucking attempted murder.
That's not like slapping her around. That's not like the Sean Connery, like, you give her a little schmuck. Like, that's not like that. Like, that's close-fisted, like, probably throwing her down the stairs and shit.
That was attempted murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't go to the hospital for 6 months after, you know, a common spat.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this matter was hushed up just like everything else.
Of course it was.
And yeah, his first wife, like we talked about, she died in the suspicious car accident, you know, when they were talking about getting divorced. Mm-hmm. So can't get a divorce, but I can kill my wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's that sounds easier.
That's called Plan B.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, all this stuff like this, I mean, he was kind of, you know, the real deal when it comes to shit like this. He's not a good person.
Yeah.
But he would be willing to do anything to, you know, keep that image.
Yeah. Keep himself protected along with trying to protect everybody else who doesn't fucking deserve it.
Yeah.
Ah, shit. Oh, so here we go. Here we go with the fucking telegrams. So some of his, like, broader patterns and methods we'll get into here. So he read stars his telegrams for early warnings, called in his boys from New Jersey for intimidation, because apparently he had mob connections out there. Like I said, arranged sham marriages for closeted actors, paid off victims of fights or accidents, and influenced corrupt officials. He was at scenes like the Paul Byrne death or Carol Lombard's crash recovery before the police, tampering or directing, you know, outcomes, just messing with evidence, that kind of thing.
fucking up the crime scenes.
Yeah, just fucking up the crime scenes, but, you know, for his benefit.
Like, why wasn't he arrested for that?
Because
tampering with evidence, like, they saw him there.
They were all together. They
I know, he's got together. His foot in yep. every fucking department corrupted. In the city.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, old school Hollywood and the LAPD were kind of working hand in hand. There's a lot of grease in the palms back then. Probably still is. So for Judy Garland, you know, beyond the addiction management, you know, the system pushed pills for performance and then fixed the breakdowns.
These examples illustrate Maddox's decades-long role, the 1920s to the early 1960s, in enabling the studio system's dark underbelly. While some details are disputed or unproven due to successful suppression, they collectively portray a man who prioritized MGM's empire above ethics or justice. His methods preserved the golden age illusion, but contributed to lasting trauma for many involved. All right. Well, Amanda, you were saying, you know, wondering why he wasn't arrested. So you want to take this to why he wasn't arrested?
Fucking no charges, man. So Maddox was never arrested, charged, or convicted for any of the scandals, cover-ups, or the, quote, alleged criminal activities associated with his role as MGM's chief fixer. What a sack of shit. Studio influence protected him. Maddox operated during the height of the studio system when MGM and other major studios wielded enormous power over LA law enforcement, district attorneys, press, and the courts. He and Howard Strickling maintained close ties with police and officials, often arriving at scenes before authorities and shaping outcomes. No formal accountability, despite involvement in high profile cases like the Patricia Douglas rape in 1937. Where he was named in a civil suit that was ultimately dismissed through legal maneuvering and delays. Maddox faced zero criminal charges. The system favored the studio. That's so, I hate that so much. Where are we at? Oh, rumors without evidence leading to arrest. So allegations around deaths such as George Reeves' death in 1959, Paul Byrne, Ted Healy, Thelma Todd, and other incidents circulated, sometimes linking him to organized crime ties, but none resulted in investigations strong enough to arrest or indict. No credible evidence surfaced that led to legal action against him personally. Biographical sources and historical accounts consistently note that while Maddox was ruthless and operated in legally gray areas, or outright illegal.
Most of the times outright illegal.
Yeah. Intimidation, payoffs, evidence tampering, witness pressure. Through all of that, he successfully avoided personal legal consequences throughout his career. It makes me so mad because that's why we know really so little about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because he was never arrested.
He was able to hide shit that he did. He was able to hide shit from other people.
Most of this stuff is from this dude. I think his name is Fleming. He wrote a book basically about him and exposed all this stuff.
I didn't read it, but.
So, no, I didn't get a chance to get my hands on it before this, but I think that's where like most of this information is from.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, Maddox died of a heart attack in Beverly Hills in 1963 and is buried at Holy Cross Cemetery in Culver City. He inspired the characters played by Josh Brolin in the Coen Brothers' 2016 film Hail Caesar, which was a satirical take on the 1950s studio fixer juggling scandals. Okay, here we go. Here's the book. Books like E.J. Fleming's The Fixers, which was about Maddox and Strickling, which is basically where we get most of these accounts from. Detail many of the scandals they allegedly managed. He remains a symbol of the dark, controlling side of old Hollywood studio power, with its ruthless efficiency in protecting the dream factory.
See, and that sucks, because Hollywood is still the same now. Not only Hollywood studios, but also the music industry.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Huge with this type of shit.
But yeah, so that is the story of Eddie Maddox.
Yeah. Well, the one good thing, too, that wasn't included there that he did do is that he, like, kept a ledger of, like, every film produced.
Oh, I've read about that. You're right.
From the MGM, like, for, I mean, decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without, he was the only one that, like, wrote down, like, how much the film cost and how much it made. And, like, he just kept records of every single movie.
Oh, no shit.
So it's kind of
cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's one good thing about this guy is that they did you know,
he could keep some records. So
yeah, he kept the records for all that. Otherwise, you know, as far as for historical purposes, since we are film historians here,
mm-hmm.
by the way, if you have that lesbian stag film,
yeah, I was gonna say, hit us up.
But
how about your boy?
So yeah. We're film scholars.
Yeah, exactly.
For research.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm a preservationist.
Yeah. But yeah, he was the only one who wrote all that shit down. So, you know, I guess there's that. One redeeming thing. Well, about this guy.
Okay, so you can thank him for IMDb. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What about you, Amanda? What are your final thoughts on Eddie Mannix?
I think there's a bunch of Eddie Mannixes nowadays.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's never been not Eddie Mannixes,
right.
Honestly.
He's
just the one of the ones that we know about. So
exactly.
Which means he was probably the worst one.
Like I said, not going back to only because I love the show Scandal. I mean, it shows like that show is fictitious, but
it's not really. It came from somewhere.
You know, it's like, you know, what they talk about in the show is clearly fictitious, but you just know that it's like, okay, we didn't just make up that.
This didn't just fall out of the sky.
Yeah, yeah.
There's fixers in politics, music industry, Hollywood.
It's fucking everywhere.
People want to save face. You know, the media now, especially with social media, like it's probably much crazier now. I mean, think of the things a fixer has to do now with, you know, social media, just anything. Internet in general.
Yeah, just the
internet
in general. Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, just, you know, your top actor or actress is really fucking up. Like, dude, how do we hide this? Or, you know, they can make or literally break somebody if they want. So, you know, I just think there's a lot of Eddie Mannixes out here. And, you know, he took a lot of his secrets to the grave, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There's clearly a lot more.
Oh, I'm sure.
So many more fucking stories.
For damn, like 40 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much more, I guess.
That's a lot of business, you know.
That man took to the grave a lot of things.
Stars are constantly fucking up, so there you go.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well,
I'm glad we talked about this because I didn't know who he was.
This was literally a random one that I pulled out of my ass. Like, it was just like, let's do this guy. Like, this seems good.
It was very interesting.
Yeah.
I liked to learn about stuff like this. I didn't know
that that Coen Brothers movie, The Hail Caesar, was based on a true story.
Well, they say it's like, it's not, but it
it's
is.
Like, satirical, it's like, but like it's like a similar kind of thing, I guess.
It was inspired by it.
It paints him in a more favorable light.
Yeah.
I think the character's, Josh Brolin's character is Eddie Mannix. I think it's his name. I have to watch the movie.
Okay.
It is based on him, but they should have. I don't want to critique something I haven't seen.
He's on their team. They're not going to be like, this guy was a piece of shit. Like, he was one of them.
Yeah, I guess
so. They're like, this guy was awesome. Like,
I think technically in the movie, he was like Edward Mannix. But in real life, he was Edgar Mannix or something. But it's like, it's loosely based on it.
No.
I wonder if Tarantino was inspired by him. Because in Hateful Eight, there's the character Walton Goggins, Chris Mannix, and it, you know, just reading about this guy, I was wondering about that because he's such like, you know, a film buff and film historian and stuff. You know,
I mean, it might have been a little nod.
Process.
Yeah, it might have been a little nod to it, possibly. All right. Well, thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. I appreciate it. Well, you heard what we think of Eddie Mannix. What do you guys think about this story? Do you believe that there's still fixers out there to this day? Because personally, I think there is. But if you got an opinion on that, you know, hit us up down below in the comments. Yeah, of course, we'll have this posted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Give us a follow if you haven't already, please. And I suppose until next time, I'm Kevin.
Kyle.
I'm Amanda.
Peace out.
Bye.
Peace.